teammates, make more friends, and express their individuality. When they learn to play some music, act or paint or dance or write creatively.
Hot from the toaster and filled with the essential creative thinking skills of an 18th century musical genius, Mozart Toasties are an important part of an arts-healthy childhood. Studies show that involvement in the arts helps kids increase test scores and promotes academic achievement. Feed your kids the arts. For 10 simple ways to learn how, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. The arts. Ask for more. Brought to you by Americans for the Arts, the NAM Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Computer Information Systems Certificate in Web Technologies and Design.
We're going to come back to that message right after this. And that's just about it for the Wrecking Hours this week. Wanted to remind everybody that the Hustle is happening this Saturday in downtown Hamtramck at Veterans Park in Hamtramck. And it is totally free to everyone. The after party is happening at the Painted Lady. And if you want to get more information, go to deadlastcc.com. That's Deadlast Car Club, who is actually putting this on. And free vendor booths if you want to set up a vendor booth or want to check out what's happening around town with all the greasers and rockers. That's the Hustle. The Hamtramck Hustle Car Show happening Saturday, pretty much all day. I believe registration's at between 8 and 9 a.m., going all the way into to dusk when we go to the after party at the Painted Lady. And if you want to get more information, that is deadlastcarclub.com. That's deadlastcc.com, actually. And be sure to check it out. I'll be spinning down there, and it is entirely free car show. Tune in next week for more Psychobilly Rockabilly from the Gothabilly Man here on the Wrecking Hours. This is the station making waves, 89.3 FM, WHFR Dearborn. Up next is the Talk Forum Hour.
Disclaimer, this show is a WHFR talk show presentation. The opinions expressed by WHFR staff and our guests are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford Community College, not faculty, staff, administrators, anyone on our Board of Trustees, or students.
Can living teach your parents well their children's hell? Will slowly go by and feed them on your dreams. The one they picked, the one you'll know by. Don't you ever ask them why. If they told you, you would cry. So just look at them and sigh.
Hi, and welcome to Parent Connection. I'm Margaret King Ahmed, your host, and this is a pre-recorded show. And I'd like to invite you to listen in on a program all about parenting and knowing different things that we need to know about parenting. And today in our studio, we have at our WHFR studios at HFCC, we have Mary Baker, and we have Lori Feldkamp. They're both RNs for the district in Dearborn District, and they're here today to talk a little bit about immunizations and getting ready for school, going back to school. So ladies, welcome. Thank you for being here today. Appreciate you taking the time from your busy schedules. Lori is actually 13 years here in Dearborn, and Mary actually is 16th, going on her 16th year here in Dearborn. And Lori has actually worked in Children's Hospital in Detroit and Ann Arbor, has also done home health care. And Mary has also been a VNA, a visiting nurse and doing healthcare. And they're going to tell us a little bit about getting ready for school. So parents, if you're listening, you want to take some notes on this, okay? Welcome, ladies. Thanks for coming.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Listen, I just want to see if we can get started on what do we need to do as parents to get our kids ready to go back to school? And maybe, Laura, you can start, and then Mary, you can chime in, okay? All right.
Okay, well, maybe we can talk about the requirements first. There are requirements for school physicals in the Dearborn District, and each new entrant into the district, no matter what grade they are, has to have a physical, and they also have to present evidence of vaccinations. That is a state requirement. They cannot enter school unless they have the proper vaccines. Also, we require physicals at kindergarten entrance, also at sixth grade, and also at ninth grade. So it's really important, if you haven't had a physical yet and your child is entering those grades, you need to contact your health care provider for an appointment.
It would be helpful to do that right away, too. As you can imagine, health care providers and clinics get very busy at this time of year. And so with school just a couple of weeks away, it would be very important to get your name into the list for your seeing your doctor or your clinic and having your child get their physical and be checked for their vaccination status to make sure their immunizations are up to date or perhaps they need a booster or two to be complete as well.
Okay. Now, if someone objects to getting immunizations, what's the protocol there? What's the process? Or can people object? And can parents say, no, this I can't do this. This is a religious thing. I'm going to object to having this done. What happens then?
There are forms that the parent can sign, but we would encourage you to review any concerns that you have with your health care provider, because it may be that there are some misunderstandings or some things that should be at least discussed so that it's very clear to you exactly what your options are. But there is a waiver form that if you still decide to have your child not vaccinated against certain vaccines, you can sign that.
Okay. Now, is that just in Dearborn, or is that Michigan? Is that the state of Michigan?
Yes, state of Michigan.
Okay. Yeah.
Margaret, there is one thing I would like to mention. When a parent signs a waiver, it's really important that they understand it. It is stated right on the waiver that if one of, for instance, if they waive the chickenpox vaccine, and a case of chickenpox happened at their school, and if it's more, you know, what they call an outbreak would be five cases in that school. If there was an outbreak at that school, then children who have waived, whose parents have waived that vaccine, will be excluded for the entire incubation period. So for chickenpox, that would be 21 days. Their child could be out of school for 21 days. And this is a directive from the health department. It's not something that we have made up. So I just want to make sure that parents are informed of that before they sign a waiver, that they know ahead of time that they would have to make provisions for their child to be home for that entire time.
Now, are there some, like I have in front of me some sheets that I actually received from you, Lori, I believe, last school year, that actually have the incubation periods and also the diseases, and I mean, how do parents know this information, or where can they get this information? Is it available to them at the schools?
Generally, we would suggest that they're always working with their physician or their healthcare provider, because until you have a definite diagnosis by someone such as that, you don't know for sure if that's what you're dealing with. And we do encounter that periodically with parents saying, my doctor said it could be, or it could be, or it might be. And so that's why it's very important to have the lab tests and whatever that are needed so your doctor can make an accurate diagnosis. And then we go from there in terms of what the exclusion period or the accommodations might be for the child.
Now, what are the more common kinds of diseases that we're seeing today, in schools especially?
Well, I mean, we see strep throat. We see flu a lot of times, you know, in the winter, mm-hmm. especially. We see flu, the common cold.
Those are probably the most common, I would say, that we see. Yeah. So many other things we don't see all that often, thankfully, because they are vaccine preventable. And so we actually rarely see measles anymore, or pertussis, for instance. Whooping cough is another one that we were starting to see more often with teenagers and young adults. And now the state has developed a new vaccine so that they give a booster for children going into sixth grade or into ninth grade for pertussis, whooping cough as well.
Okay, but pink eye is still around, isn't it? But
that's pink eye
is
around.
But you got pink eye and then the flus. And so what can parents do, you know, just to kind of preventative measures for kids during flu season, say? What should we be telling our kids or telling our parents to do and help kids understand what to do?
Well, I think hand washing is number one. Teaching your child how to properly wash their hands and when to wash their hands, always before they eat, always after they use the restroom, and, you know, several times during the day. We don't want them to become obsessed with it and, you know, washing their hands excessively, but at the appropriate times, they should be washing their hands with soap and water. They can use hand sanitizer if soap and water is not available, but that's probably the number one preventive measure. Maybe Mary can talk about others.
Well, another thing would be the whole thing with not touching your face or your mouth, you know, keeping your hands away from your face, because the hands, of course, are the most likely to be carrying the germs. So that would be another one that would be helpful for children to remember and be taught.
Mm-hmm. Okay. As far as, where do I want to go with this? I guess as far as kids being sick, we talked a little bit about this earlier about how parents typically send kids back to school before they're ready to go back when they've been sick. Mm-hmm. So can you kind of highlight what the protocol is for going back to school after you've been homesick with fever or flu and that kind of thing?
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, health department guidelines say that a child should not return to school until they're fever-free, which means their temperature has to be less than 100 degrees, and that is without fever-reducing medication. So, for instance, occasionally we'll have a child come to school and, you know, later in the day they develop a fever and we find out that they had that fever in the morning and the parent gave them Tylenol, which meant that the fever went down, but the cause of the fever is still there. They still have a communicable disease. So we want to make sure that they're fever-free for at least 24 hours. So, for instance, that means if we send them home from school on Monday with a fever, they should not be back in school on Tuesday. It would be at least Wednesday before they can be back in school. Also, they should be free of vomiting or diarrhea for at least 24 hours before coming back to school.
Okay. So as far as what can kids be putting in their body at that time, you know, what do we want them to do to increase the odds of feeling better sooner? What kind of things should they be doing?
I think fluids is probably your best thing right off the bat. And if you can use just regular water is really a better thing than getting kids kind of hooked on the fruit juices or the sweetened things, but just trying to encourage them to have a water bottle nearby. And as soon as if they were having trouble with vomiting, of course, you'd have to maybe start with sips of water. But definitely with a cold or with the flu, respiratory things, trying to get as much water in as possible is helpful.
Okay. Now, especially in the summertime, we see kids that are probably out and about and not really paying attention to the drinking of the water, and I'm making a big issue of it because I myself suffer from dehydration very often because I haven't created my own best practices with drinking water. So I guess that's why I'm pushing this so much, is this, that I think that it's important that we put the right kind of fluids into the body. We see a lot of obesity today, and I have a sneaky suspicion it's from some of these drinks that kids drink, the syrupy drinks, the corn syrupy drinks, and now there's that new drink to give kids energy, you know, those monster drinks. What do you think about all of that?
I really am not in favor of the energy drinks for children. They do often contain a large amount of caffeine. In fact, I had a student come into my office once in the high school, and he was having palpitations. And it ended up that he was on a medication for ADHD, which kind of can speed up the heart a little bit. And on top of that, he had had two Red Bull, I shouldn't say the name probably, but he had had two energy drinks that morning. So that combination really caused him difficulties. He was very anxious because he was having these palpitations and didn't feel well. So that's just one example of why I'm really not in favor of energy drinks for kids. They should have plenty of energy if they get the proper diet. A good balanced diet. Breakfast is critically important. You know, Mary and I both see kids almost every single day that they're working, that we are working, that come in, you know, they're lethargic, they have a headache, they just
feel dizzy.
Like they're dizzy.
Yeah,
they
their blood sugars may be low, you know, because they have not had anything to eat in the morning.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So parents could really nip a lot in the bud just by giving their kids breakfast in the morning. And breakfast, we're talking about something healthy.
Something healthy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, we do serve a population, mostly Arab population, but, you know, still they have very healthy foods. Mm-hmm. They do. And they do fruits and they do nuts and seeds and things of that nature, and the hummus and the tabbouleh and, and you know, the spinach pies and things like that. Mm-hmm. So I definitely think that I agree. I think breakfast is important. I too suffered from that. I didn't eat breakfast every morning. I just got up and drank some water and took off. And I found that, not the headaches, but lethargic, didn't have the energy. It was really, it's not worth it. Have breakfast. It's really worth the time and energy it takes to do that, and it doesn't take much time at all.
I think the high school kids especially have a hard time with that because they do start school at 7:20 in the morning. They have to be in their seat for first hour. And, you know, if they get on the bus, they might be getting on the bus at 6:30 or before that. So a lot of them, you know, they're not getting up and allowing enough time for breakfast. So I usually try to tell them to have something they can even grab and take along with them and eat as they're, you know, walking to school, or, you know, they can't eat on the bus, but, you know, they can bring something and even go to the cafeteria and eat it before class starts if they allow a few extra minutes. You know, try to have some protein with your breakfast, not just sugary cereals, you know, that just don't stick with you very long. Protein is really important to include with each meal, but especially breakfast.
Right, and kind of hooking on to that, I also suggest to the students, even especially the high schoolers, if they have something in their backpack or in their locker that they can just grab, and I talk about granola bars or these little individual packets of like cheese and crackers or peanut butter and crackers that are relatively easy to carry, just a couple packs of them, or have them in your locker, and those do have then a bit of protein as well with the cheese or peanut butter.
Mm-hmm. All right, very good. So the other thing I think is important here for parents to hear is, the, you know, are we making sure our kids drink enough water? Are we making sure they've got their vaccinations? Are we making sure that they're getting enough exercise? In today's world, we've got so many more conveniences, which allows us to be a little more lazier than we've ever been, I think. That, I mean, that's my opinion. This is not the opinion of, you know, WHFR, HFCC. It's my opinion. And so what do you have to say about that? We were talking earlier about how sometimes we see kids playing outside, but they're not really playing. They're in these little remote cars and in not really getting exercise, but they're learning how to push buttons.
Right. In fact, I saw one down the block for me just a few days ago, and I saw two little darling children riding this little motorized car down the sidewalk. And, you know, I just kind of cringed because I thought, you know, I wish they were riding a bike instead. Now, maybe they do that in addition to riding the car, but, you know, if you're looking at a birthday gift or, you know, thinking about something to get for your child, you know, and I know those motorized cars aren't inexpensive, you know, maybe you could instead put that money into a really nice bike so that they are getting some exercise. That provides so many more benefits for them than sitting and riding in a motorized car. You know, it makes them use their balance, their eye-hand coordination, it gets their muscles moving. So I think that's a much better choice than a car.
Yeah. Mary, you have anything to say about that?
I agree. I totally agree.
So how much exercise is the right amount of exercise?
Well, I think
for young kids.
Yeah, I think I don't know numbers exactly, but trying to get outside and moving every day, I would say. Even if your family just walks down to the park and the children, you know, go down the slide or are in the swings or do that kind of thing, but doing things together that way can create kind of a climate of this family does things together, not just sitting watching television together, but we go outside and we move around and maybe even running, kicking a ball or throwing a ball back and forth or that kind of thing, going down to the park and back, just every day trying to get some type of exercise together.
Oh, I love it. I think that's, it is true that, I mean, they say for, even for adults, 30 minutes a day, but mm-hmm. I think for all of us, it could be even more than that if you think about just getting up and getting your day started and what you do during the day until the end of the day, you've done more than 30 minutes.
Right,
obviously.
And picking up on what Mary mentioned about television is limiting your child's screen time. You know, they call it screen time when they're either playing a video game or they're just sitting watching television. You really want to limit that. I don't have an exact amount of time, but, you know, certainly you don't want them sitting there for 3 hours watching TV or playing video games. Part of that time, they need to be outside exercising.
Well, yeah, and, you know, it's summer. And, mm-hmm. you know, I should just say the weather is warm right now because these are evergreen shows. They like to show them all year, or like to play these all year long. So if I say, oh, this is for the winter and the summer, then I'm in big trouble. But anyway, so, you know, but typically in the winter, there is less outdoor time. Mm-hmm. And so this is the time that we really want during the spring and the fall and summer. We really want to push that idea of being outside, getting the exercise, getting the fresh air. Mm-hmm. Fresh air and sunshine can do a lot or wonders for people and their well-being. So I think that anything we can do to help do that as parents to promote that, the more we get them out, the better they're going to be in establishing healthy habits, lifelong mm-hmm. healthy habits. We had something that I didn't get a chance to talk about yet, but we'd like to start a conversation about the handling of blood. And, you know, in schools we have practice, you know, teachers have to put gloves on. There's a certain way to take gloves off. There's a certain way we handle everything. Outside the school premise, you know, kids fall down, they hurt themselves, and, you know, you're with your friend and you want to help your friend. What do you advise parents to teach their children about, you know, coming to the rescue of another friend who is bleeding? Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, I think it's very important to teach your children that they shouldn't come in direct contact with someone else's blood without a barrier. They need a barrier, whether it's gloves or even if they're outside and they have to improvise putting, you know, something over it, a towel, a sweater, just something between them and the blood. You know, in real life, that's not always done. It's not always practical, but we want to teach them that that's what they should try to do. Another issue that comes up in that same vein is that we never know what somebody has in their blood. You know, so that's why immunizations are very, very important. The hepatitis B vaccine is required for school, and it is important because that is one of the blood-borne pathogens that your child could be exposed to.
Okay. We're going to talk a little bit more about that. I just want to tell you thank you very much for listening, and we'll take just this little message break and be right back. This is a pre-recorded show. This is Parent Connection, and I'm Margaret King Ahmed. Thank you.
Hey, parents, say hello to Instant Style with Fashion On. Just spray and look cool in an instant.
What about my bifocals?
Hey, I can't see. But your kids can see you, and trust me, they see fashion. Fashion On is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
Computer Information Systems, Certificate in Web Technologies and Design.
Love to design stuff and play on the internet? Henry Ford Community College offers a one-year certificate program in web technologies and design. Advanced HTML, computer art, web authoring tools, and web multimedia are a few of the courses offered.
Computer Information Systems, Certificate in Web Technologies and Design.
The program is designed to prepare a student to take CIW Certificate Internet Webmaster exams.
For more information on CIW exams, log on to www.ciwcertified.com.
Drop by the HFCC counseling office or log on to the web at hfcc.edu.
Computer Information Systems, Certificate in Web Technologies and Design.
Hi, you're listening to Margaret King Ameta on the Parent Connection program. This is a pre-recorded show, WHFR Dearborn, and in the studios today at WHFR HFCC Studios, we have Mary Baker and we have Lori Feldkamp. They're both RNs for the Dearborn Public Schools, and we are going to talk a little bit more about prevention, prevention measures to prevent our kids from getting sick. So who wants to start?
You want to take that, Mary?
Okay, well, one of the things we were mentioning during that break was the question about cough etiquette. And many of the parents may have, when they were children, always learned the thing or just kind of instinctively coughed into their hands. But as we had mentioned earlier, hands carry germs, and we can't always wash our hands or keep them as clean as we'd like. So the more recent thinking is to encourage our children to cough into their elbows. So if you see children doing that, it may look a little foreign to you at first. But definitely you can understand the reasoning for that is to have children cough into their elbows, which then doesn't really, the germs that might be left there would not be in contact so readily as if they were on their hands.
Okay. And Lori, was there another preventative measure that you wanted to talk about?
I think really getting adequate sleep is very, very important for children. It's hard in the summertime, at the end of the summer, to kind of get them back on that school schedule. You know, it's light out until at least 9 o'clock at night, and you know, it's the last few weeks, you know, they're trying to get all that extra playing in. But I think it's really important to try to get them back into a school schedule, you know, especially the really young ones, especially the kindergartners, because they're going to be in school all day now. We have all day kindergarten in all of our buildings. So you really have to start working on it at least a couple weeks before school starts. Getting them in the house maybe about 8 o'clock, getting them kind of winding down, maybe reading a story, having their bedtime snack, getting them into a routine. Try to keep a pretty consistent routine every day so that they get used to that and they know that this is what they do at bedtime, and they kind of quiet down so that they can get a good night's sleep. That does really help boost their immune system, adequate sleep. They found there many studies that if people are deprived of sleep, their immune system does not work properly, and they're more prone to infection. So that's, I think, really important.
Oh, I agree. Now, we have a couple phone numbers or some places that people can go, right?
Mm-hmm. Some websites.
You want websites? Mm-hmm. Can you share that with the audience, please? Mm-hmm.
One that I think is really good is cdc.gov. And again, it's cdc.gov, and this is the Centers for Disease Control website. And they have an excellent website. You can go on there and get information about just any kind of disease you can imagine. And it's all alphabetical. You know, they have the ABCs right there. So if you're looking for something, say, pertussis, which is whooping cough, you just click on the P, or you can click on W for whooping cough, and you can find that disease and all the information about it. They even have things about should there be animals in school. I saw that on the website yesterday. What about pets in school? What are the issues pertaining to that? So I thought that was really interesting. I was kind of poking around on the site yesterday. That's a very, we use that too. We nurses use that. Physicians use it. It's a very, very good website. Another one that I like a lot is called familydoctor.org. And again, it has information on all kinds of diseases and all kinds of preventive measures and anything that you might discuss with a pediatrician or family doctor. And it's a very easy to navigate website. Another one is the Access website, accesscommunity.org, and it has a list of all their services, which is a great resource in our community. And a couple phone numbers. The Access phone number is 313-216-2200. They do have a medical clinic there. They do provide school physicals, immunizations, so that's a great resource for our parents. Another is the Wayne County Health Department. They have immunizations available. And their number is 734-727-7000. You'd want to ask, that's their general number, you'd want to ask for the school immunization department. I think that's the
best ones locally.
The ones that I have written down.
Right.
There are all kinds of things on the web, of course, but you always have to be careful as to what site you're looking at. So these I really trust, especially the CDC site. It's an excellent resource.
Okay, thank you. And we also have, well, I wanted to share, back-to-school event. Children will be admitted free noon to 4 p.m. Friday to the Detroit Children's Museum during a back-to-school event by Detroit Public Schools. Parent workshops, free flashcard kits, and free backpacks will be offered. Free immunizations will be offered noon to 3 p.m. Admissions for adults is $4. The museum is at 6134 Second Avenue in Detroit. So I know this is a pre-recorded show, so if you hear this Monday, it might be too late. I'm just realizing that just now, that this is for actually Friday, isn't it? Oh, for goodness sakes, we might have to edit that. Huh, Roger? Anyway, I guess the other thing that I want to talk about is children that are in school and messing with other people's, belongings. What do you got to say about that? Putting somebody else's hat on, putting somebody else's scarf on, using their coat or gloves. What do you want to advise parents or kids?
Well, I think that that's a good point you're bringing up, and teachers typically keep an eye on that, and especially at the beginning of the year, try and help their children, really, their classroom, learn the etiquette, so to speak, of things, sharing, not sharing, because on the one hand, we encourage our children to be kind and generous and share, but then there are certain things that are better not to be shared, particularly what you were talking about when it gets more wintertime with hats or scarves and some of those kinds of things, and girls with some of the hair pieces or the braiding, you know, the different things that they would use for that. So it would be best to help your child learn already at an early age that certain things, articles of clothing or brushes, combs, hair things, we do not share. We each use our own, just like we each use our own toothbrush. We would do the same thing with those other items too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the other thing that I was thinking about is in the lunchroom. A lot gets shared in the lunchroom. What do you got to say about that?
Absolutely, especially in the high school. They, take a drink from their can of pop, and then they share it with their neighbor, and that's really not a good idea. There are a lot of illnesses that can be transmitted that way. One of the most common is mononucleosis. We call it mono. Mm-hmm. And sharing, saliva is not a good idea. So that's really important for parents to reinforce with their children. They shouldn't be sharing eating utensils, drinking glasses, pop cans, that sort of thing.
Now, we talked earlier about meningitis, and we were saying why the immunizations were so important. You want to just kind of share that story about, I think it was meningitis, someone.
Yes. Yeah, we did have a child some years ago in one of our schools who unfortunately contracted meningitis and did subsequently pass away. So it was, of course, a very sad thing and reminded all of us that diseases are out there that parents need to be aware of, and certainly now we do have a vaccine for meningitis. That was not readily available at that point, so we're very thankful for that, and it would be an example of how they're always developing vaccines and immunizations for children for such things that are life-threatening, diseases life-threatening.
Which makes me think about allergies. Kids that have allergies to peanuts and things of that nature. Do you think some of these allergies, I know this is kind of like a loaded gun here, but do you think some of these allergies do equate or stem from some of these vaccinations that kids, get allergies or that they didn't have before, and yet they get these immunization shots, and then before you know it, there's issues, health issues, beyond what the actual thing was that they're being treated for with the immunization? I mean, do you want to mention anything or talk about that at all?
Well, I think sometimes parents will equate or they might connect an allergy to a vaccine when actually it's a coincidental thing. Maybe the allergy has popped up just after they received a vaccine, but it's, for instance, if it's like a peanut allergy, it's not known that any of the vaccines can cause a peanut allergy. It's just something that happens. And it could happen just after they received an immunization. So, I think it's really important to try to talk to your physician or your healthcare provider to try to sort that out. The logical conclusion might be, oh yeah, it's from the vaccine, but actually it's not the case at all. So, whenever you have a question like that, it's really important to talk to your healthcare provider.
So I think, too, it's also telling us that as parents, we need to pay a lot of attention to our children Each one's different. And each one, you know, has, you know, it might have different food issues, might have different sensitivities. So it's really an important task. It is a task in a way, but it's a responsibility as well to pay attention to what kind of things your child is exhibiting, you know, even at home when they're eating. You know, if they're drinking milk and all of a sudden they can't breathe right, you know, there might be a connection. There could be, might have to do with the conversation. maybe the parents found out the son or daughter flunked a class. And the child's all of a sudden drinking his milk and feeling, I'm choking on the milk. No, I'm just kidding. But anyway, it's more serious than that, obviously. It's just that we want to make sure that kids are being treated for their illnesses right from the get-go and that the immunizations happen, you know, at the time that they're supposed to happen and that you keep a close watch on your child to see if there's any kind of reaction to some of these immunizations. So let me go right from, you know, let me just kind of springboard from this, what I'm saying, to this next question, which is for you, you know, what are some of the drawbacks from the immunizations or some of the, what do I want to say, you know what I'm looking for, the word I'm looking for.
Side effects.
Thank you. It just wasn't coming to me just now. But what are some of the side effects for some kids with immunizations? What might they experience?
Well, the most common thing that we typically see is that the arm or the site of the injection can become somewhat reddened and painful. And that can definitely be accommodated by, you know, putting a cool compress on or even using perhaps like Tylenol or Advil or something like that, whatever your doctor would recommend. But in a fair number of children, we would see some discomfort, I would say, at the site of the injection. But that's probably the most common. Occasionally, a child will maybe feel a bit feverish or achy the day of or the next day, but even that again is not as common as the injection site being tender to touch.
Are there any risk for people that are even like 60, 70, older, taking flu shots?
Well, with any vaccine, there's a small chance of an adverse reaction, so that's why it's really important to be informed. Whenever a vaccine is given, the vaccine provider is required to give you a vaccine information statement. They call them a VIS. And so there's one for each vaccine that is on the market. So it's important to get that document, read it over. But also be aware that the vast majority of individuals have no problem at all from the flu vaccine, or very, very mild, like Mary was mentioning, maybe a little bit of tenderness at the site, maybe feel a little bit under the weather for a couple of days. But if you compare that to having the flu, which is an illness that can last, you know, 2 weeks or longer, it can lead to all kinds of complications, pneumonia, and even to death, I think that little bit of inconvenience and discomfort is much preferable, you know, to the alternative.
Right. Now, have people actually gotten sick, though, even though they've had the shot? I mean, do you know of any cases like that?
Well, there are many different flu bugs, or so to speak, out there. So that's one of the tricky things for the developers each year of the flu vaccine is trying to predict and anticipate which are going to be the most common bugs of that year, germs of that year, and then create the, you know, form the flu vaccine based on that. So they try and say, okay, the most likely culprits are going to be X, X, and X. That's what we will put into our flu vaccine this year. Unfortunately, there, like I said, there are many other germs out there that can cause the flu vaccine as well. The virus, I mean, can cause the flu itself. So people sometimes will get a different virus, exposed to a different virus, and get sick from that. But typically the flu vaccine, even if you do come in contact with the virus, you may have a much lesser case of it and perhaps would just be sick for a day or two compared to like for several weeks, as Lori had mentioned earlier.
Okay, very good. Now, the hepatitis, is that still something? I mean, do we have to give that to small children, or is that for kids in high school and adults?
Well, it is required for admission to school. So for kindergarten, you know, they do have to have that for admission to school. You know, and once again, if a parent has an objection, you know, they need to talk to their physician or healthcare provider about that. I personally think it's a very important vaccine to get because, like Mary was mentioning before, if kids are outside and, you know, they're they're encountering somebody else's blood, that's something that, you know, is a concern. Hepatitis B can be transmitted, you know, through blood-to-blood contact. So I do think it's a very important vaccine, even for young children.
Okay. Herpes. What about herpes? Is that something we got to be on the lookout for?
Well, occasionally we have a child that has shingles, which is a form of herpes.
Right.
And that's not very common. I would say in my 12 years with the district, maybe two or three times I've had a student with shingles. But it is important to know that that student can be in school as long as the lesions are covered.
Okay.
Because it's only contagious if you're in direct contact with any drainage from those lesions. So as long as it's covered, the student can be back in school.
Okay. What about, is it impetigo?
Mm-hmm.
What about that?
Yeah, that one, we generally would use these guidelines from Wayne County. And I believe that with impetigo, it's a 24-hour period, I believe, that they need to be under treatment because it is a bacteria. And so they have to start the treatment and be out of school until they've been on the treatment, which would be medication from their physician for 24 hours.
Okay. Now, the common cold. What do you want to tell us about the common cold? That's something everybody's getting all the time. I mean, what do we do?
Yeah, again, there you would want to try and, if your child is really coughing and having a hard time, you know that the virus is going to be then flying through the air to the other children as well. So you really would prefer to keep them home for at least 24 hours until the symptoms are abating. And so, again, active symptoms, acute symptoms with the cough, and then going back to, again, what Lori had talked about, being fever-free for 24 hours without using Tylenol or some kind of medication such as that.
Do we have enough Kleenex in the classrooms?
Well, you know, I do usually mention when I speak at Kindergarten Roundup to parents that are getting ready to send their kids to kindergarten, you know, if they have a cold, you know, we can't keep every child home for every single day that they have a cold. You know, especially when they're young, they do catch a lot of colds. So I just tell parents, you know, if they can't manage their secretions independently, then they shouldn't be in school, because then it means that, you know, they're getting it all over their hands and then they're spreading it on surfaces and objects in the classroom, and that's really an excellent way to transmit that virus. So if they can't manage it on their own, they really need to stay home for that day.
Now, the Purell, is it Purell?
Purell.
All that liquid wash your hands
sanitizer.
Stuff, incisors. Yeah, mm-hmm. What about all that? Is that really work? Mm-hmm. Is that working?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, we can't really have sinks with hot water and soap nearby, you know, for every child every time. And so I've seen a lot of teachers have hand sanitizer, even maybe just at the doorway coming in or going out of their classroom, and have the children use it just as part of their routine.
Yeah, I think they're good habits, you know, just really good habits for kids. And I want to come back and talk a little bit more about that. But and we're going to give the websites and the phone numbers again as soon as we come back. And you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. This is Parent Connection. I'm Margaret King. I'm Ed, your host. And stay tuned.
Hey, WHFR listeners, I'm Dennis.
And I'm Lindsay.
And we're your hosts for a new talk show here at Henry Ford Community College called HFCC's Campus Connection.
That's right. From 1 to 2 p.m. on the second Tuesday of every month, Dennis and I will cover the news, issues, and events here on the campus of HFCC and talk about how they relate to the surrounding communities.
Basically, we bring you all the news we think you want to know about our college and our station, WHFR.
We talk about the fantastic restaurant we have right here on campus.
And upcoming performances of HFCC plays and musicals.
We'll even keep you posted on the success of our various sports teams.
In fact, we fill you in on all of the campus activities open to the public, many of them absolutely free.
So when it comes to Henry Ford Community College news,
make the connection.
The HFCC Campus Connection. On 89.3 FM from 1 to 2 p.m. on the second Tuesday of every month.
Plus WHFR.FM.
The station making waves.
Mom, Dad, I'm in eighth grade now. Those years of peer pressure are way behind me. Right now, alcohol is the last thing on my mind. So please, don't have a real conversation with me about drinking. Like you said, I'm too young, right?
Real kids are curious about alcohol. 40% try it by the eighth grade. Start a real conversation at underagedrinking.samhsa.gov. Talk early, talk often, get others involved. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Hi, you're back, and this is WHFR Dearborn. This is Parent Connection. I'm your host, Margaret King Ahmed, and in the studios today at HFCC radio station, we have Lori Velkamp and we have Mary Baker, and they're both RNs from the Dearborn District. And we're going to talk a little bit more about getting ready and going back to school, and getting our kids ready for that. What does that look like? What are the practices here that we're talking about for getting ready for school, setting up good habits again? Getting back into the swing of getting up on time, getting our study habits working again for us, and eating right, exercising, and obviously the immunizations for going back to school. So during the break, Mary and Lori and I had a minute to talk a little bit more about some things that we wanted to share with our listeners. And one of the things that we wanted to talk about was MyCar. Is that what it's called?
It's called Micr.
Micr. Mm-hmm. Micr. It's a database. You guys want to talk about that, please?
Okay. Micr, it's MCIR, and that stands for Michigan Care Improvement Registry. And that is a statewide database for immunizations, and also it covers other things. For instance, when your children have their vision screened. That is put into Micr. Also, public health authorities can also monitor
trends,
mm-hmm. Disease trends mm-hmm. through Micr. But the reason I wanted to bring it up is because it's a resource for parents. I did mention the website, which is mcir.org. There is a homepage. There is all kinds of information about vaccines, about school requirements on there. There's a button to click on. It's public. It used to be called parents, but now that they also have included adults in the database, they have changed it to public. So click on public. There's all kinds of links that you can click on as far as what the requirements are, information about you can get the vaccine information statements for each vaccine on that website. Just a myriad of resources for us. But one thing that's really, really important to realize is that you need to keep an official copy of your child's immunization record. And if you don't have one now, the best way to get one is to call your healthcare provider. And they can very easily print out a Micr record for you. And that is the official immunization record. If you can't contact your physician, you can, through the website, download a form that you can fill out. And you can either mail it or fax it to the Micr system, and they have all that information online, and they will send one to you. Once you get it, make sure you keep that in a very, very, very safe place, because a lot of parents don't realize that years down the road, you might need that information. And both Mary and I have had situations where people call and, I graduated in 1974 and I don't have my immunizations, and, the school doesn't keep them, okay? That's not our place to keep people's immunization records. We get the information for entry to school, but beyond that, that's not our function. So that's really something that's for the healthcare providers to do. And now that we have this great database, I do also want to mention that database is protected. It's confidential. That's why parents can't just go on there and get their child's record. Okay, it has to be through somebody who is registered in the system. So don't think that your neighbor down the street can go onto the system and get your child's record. It's very secure and confidential. We have to go through a registration process, and we have to have a reason to use that system. And for us, it's to make sure that our students are compliant with their vaccines. Have I missing anything here, Mary?
Well, I'm to just kind of carry on with that. I mean, we do have several times a year, we talk about them as exclusion days, where we go to Micr and find out the students for each building and check if there are any students who are missing, like a booster or whatever shots that they might need. And the state does require two times a year, November 1 and February 1, that every district in the state submit all their numbers and turn in their Micr what the numbers are for the children of every building in their district. So typically what we do is about a month before that, we go through the database and do all our Micr records and try and make sure everything is as up-to-date as we know, and then we let MICR tell us, okay, what children are missing certain things, and this may have been just an oversight that it wasn't entered into MICR, or it could be that your child actually maybe was sick one time when they went to the doctor and didn't get one of their shots. So we then mail letters to the parents several weeks ahead of time saying, this is what MICR is telling us, that we're still looking for X or X with your child, maybe a second MMR or whatever it would be, measles, mumps, rubella is the MMR, perhaps a varicella, and occasionally the state does change requirements as well. It used to be that younger children needed just a dose of the varicella, that's the chickenpox vaccine, and now that has become a two-dose requirement. So the younger children need, a lot of children are needing that second dose when they go to their doctor. So this is the type of thing that we school nurses use MICR to help us determine just what we need and how to get our children as many compliant as we can and up to date.
Hmm. Well, I was just thinking chickenpox. Why are there two shots now? What's happened? I didn't realize there was two shots. Mm-hmm. I mean, my kids are all grown, so they don't get the immunization shots anymore. And I did keep my records for a very, very long time because I did find that I needed them even when they went to college. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right.
So you're right. They need to be in a safe, safe spot. Mm-hmm. But why two shots now? What's going on? Is there more outbreaks of the chickenpox? Is the strain of chickenpox stronger?
I think they were finding, no, it's not a change really that way, but when they were giving just the one dose to the younger children, they were finding that more of them than they wanted were still coming down with a mild case of chickenpox. And so they determined that by giving two doses, they would prevent that. And so very, very few children come down with any type of chickenpox at all if they've had the two doses of the vaccine.
Right. Wow, very good. Lori, can you give the phone numbers and a few more of those, the numbers that we gave earlier about where people could find out more about their immunization or go mm-hmm. and get shots?
Right. MICR.org, MCIR.org. And then we talked about the CDC site, CDC.gov. Also, we have some phone numbers for some resources if you can't get into your healthcare provider before school starts. One is the Access Clinic, which is 313-216-2200. I know that they will occasionally take walk-ins, but it is recommended that you have an appointment. So things get really busy at the end of the summer. It's recommended that you make an appointment. Also, the Wayne County Health Department has clinics. They have a couple different sites. One is in Taylor and one is in Westland. And their number is 734-727-7000. Again, that's their general number, so you need to call to ask for what you need, which would be school immunizations. And their different sites have different hours, so you want to get, specific information when you call as to which site you're going to. So I think those are, two really good resources. Unfortunately, as some people may not be aware, our Dearborn Health Department is no longer in operation. Due to budget cuts, it did close permanently at the end of the school year. So that's a great loss to us that we use them heavily as far as keeping our children immunized. But we do have other resources in the community. It's important for parents to know that.
Thank you both very much. I wanted to ask you each to share maybe one story, a personal story from your days as RNs and nurses in the school district. I mean, what was your most horrendous episode, or what was your most memorable episode with dealing as a nurse with a student or even a teacher? Maybe you even had to deal with a teacher. I didn't give you much time to think about this earlier because they didn't know I was going to ask this question, but maybe you can respond to that. You got one, Mary?
I do have one. This was a high school situation that I'm thinking of because I think that there's a bottom line lesson to be learned on this, and this was a child who has asthma, who knows he has asthma, and did not have his inhaler with him. And so I think that's just a critical point for parents to be aware. If your child has an inhaler, like a rescue inhaler, and they have that in your home, please be sure to let the school know and fill out the papers so that your child can have that inhaler at school as well. Obviously, this particular one was a teenager, which they kind of start doing their own thing and not wanting to do the like what their parents might wish. But He did not have his inhaler with him at school, and by the time he got to me in my clinic, he could barely speak. I mean, as I was trying to say, okay, let's call home for your inhaler, what's your phone number? He really literally could not give me his phone number. He was gasping for air that much. So obviously that was a 911 situation, but I just think that it's a relatively simple and treatable thing for children with asthma. If your doctor says they need an inhaler with them, then they need an inhaler, and the school definitely wants to know about it and have accommodated correctly for that.
All right. And Lori?
I guess I would have to say the most memorable is when we, at Edsel Ford High School, we had a gentleman who was driving on Rotunda right in front of the school, and he slumped at the wheel, and he needed to have CPR done on him. Unfortunately, it was not a good outcome. He didn't make it, but I was so proud of the staff, the way that they handled it. Everybody worked as a team. Somebody actually noticed that the car was kind of swerving and notified the staff, and secretary ran out there, and the security guards ran out there, and they actually had to lift him out of the car, and we had to put him on the sidewalk, and we started CPR, and we use the defibrillator. We do have defibrillators in all of our schools now. So we did do that. And like I said, it was too bad that he didn't make it, but it was very memorable. And I was just so proud of the staff, the way they handled the situation.
It just goes to show you that you really have to, you know, have training to do like the CPR and the defibrillator. In fact, if they're in each building, the defibrillators, who's trained on those? Is all staff members trained?
Well, we wish we could say that every single staff person has been trained, but all the phys ed, the physical education teachers, are trained, and then other staff members in the building. So, you know, it varies from building to building.
Okay. And as far as teachers go, your most memorable time with a teacher dealing with a student that had a health issue, do you have one? I'm going to think for a minute.
Well, I mean, I've had some students with diabetes who sometimes they'll be in a situation where their blood sugar is dropping too low. And I think it's really important for those students to learn how to communicate to the teacher effectively what is going on with them.
Okay.
Because, you know, sometimes if every teacher could, you know, count the number of times a student said, "I don't feel good," I mean, they would go crazy, but it's important for them to learn to say something like, I'm too low," you know, just to kind of clue that teacher into that it's not just a regular "I don't feel good" kind of situation. And I did have a student who had kind of forgotten, you know, the right words to say, and just, you know, didn't say too much and was dropping down very quickly. And luckily, everything turned out okay. It was handled okay, but you know, that did kind of remind me to really stress with those students that they need to use the proper words with the teacher so that they can really effectively communicate what's going on with them.
Well, and, you know, I did notice that in the schools they do have snack time for a lot of kids now. Is that one of the reasons they do that is because, I mean, is diabetes on the rise or what? I mean, are there more kids diagnosed with it?
Well, it, you know, type 1 diabetes, where they do have to be on insulin, it does seem like we're seeing an increase in the last several years. And certainly type 2 diabetes, you know, which is a result of inactivity, our lifestyle, that has been increasing.
Wow. Okay. Well, gosh, we're running out of time here, and so I just want to make sure that we get in our goodbyes and any last words from the two of you. And I want to thank you, first of all, both of you, Mary and Lori, for taking the time out of your busy schedules coming in. And you're gearing up for the school year. What does that mean for you, for the both of you? What does that mean? Oh, my gosh. Where do you start?
Yeah. Well, we have each have a lot of buildings. So we, especially in September, we have to do a lot of prioritizing and essentially almost triage that situations with children with diabetes and asthma and allergies, peanut allergies and things like that have to be higher on the list in terms of how do we care for them. And unfortunately, we have to put some other things maybe a bit lower on the list than each classroom teacher might think or each parent might think. But we definitely have to try and get everybody safe and as quickly as we can.
Wow. Right. And it's happening. It's coming so fast. I mean, we've got a few weeks before we're all back into the swing of things. Mm-hmm. So I want to thank you both very, very much for being here and all your hard work and effort and your education and your training for staff as well, for teachers, mm-hmm. and for coming on the show and presenting sharing your information with the parents out there who we care and love so much. So my name is Margaret King Ahmed, and this is Parent Connection. And this is a pre-recorded show. This is WHFR Dearborn. And the show is going to be aired, I believe, on Monday, Roger, is that correct? From 6 to 7, is that correct? So you can hear this show on Monday, 6 to 7. It's every fourth, I believe, Monday of every month. And we'll be bringing more guests in once a month to just share more information with you to keep you more in the loop and up to date as parents. And I know how hard that is being a parent myself, raising, I've raised 5 children, have grandchildren now. And I know that being a parent is something you'll do for the rest of your life. So anything that we can do here for you at WHFR, please give us a call at 845-9676. Let us know that you're listening and let us know that what we're bringing to you is helping. You know, that's all we can do is work as a team like Mary and Lori do. They work as a team covering the district. And there's one more person. I forgot. There is one. Who's the other person?
Maggie. Mall.
Maggie mm-hmm. Mall. I'm sorry she mm-hmm. couldn't be with us today, but our blessings go out to her. And we want to thank you, each and every one of you, for doing what you do to keep our children safe, our schools up and running, and giving us what we need to know to get back into school. Thank you again. And take care.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We can live in, teach your parents well. Their children's hell will slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams. The one they picked, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would cry. So just look at them and sigh, and know they love you.
The WHFR Monday Forum, an hour of a wide variety of one or more talk show programs from 6 to 7 p.m., some of which are locally produced.
Today turns into yesterday, leaving only words we say for this time.
New ideas and information, different each week, not available on other Detroit stations. That's why we're the station making waves, WHFR.fm. Email your comments, questions, and suggestions to whfr@hfcc.edu.
The good times, the hard times, this time is our time.
The WHFR Monday Forum, 6 to 7 p.m. And also listen to all locally produced talk shows on WHFR Tuesday Forum from 1 to 2 p.m.
Hello, everybody. You are listening to WHFR.fm, and you're listening to me, Jessica, here with Just a Little Indie this evening from 7 to 9, and we're just going to start out with some music from Sia here on the station making waves, WHFR Dearborn.